This is Radio Superior 1950, a reproduction of actual news events with authentic popular music from the 1950s. This is a true story of our past. So step back with us to another time. We bring you now inside the KUWS radio studios and the Martin and McKenna Show.
This is the voice from the head of the Great Lakes, Jack McKenna speaking. It's Thursday, November 30th, 1950. Lou Martin has the 6 o'clock news. Seagar Swanson is in with an editorial about accepting the atom bomb. Colonel Raffaele talks, or should I say blabs, about building your own bomb shelter. And we have some great music from Nat King Cole and Frank Sinatra.
Colonel Raffaele will talk about building something. Have you ever seen him wield a hammer?
Well, Raffy's hammer is a secret weapon in itself. The 6 o'clock news is brought to you by Cal Miller's Standard Service Station at Belknap and Tower. To celebrate his grand opening, they'll give you a personalized lubrication job with the purchase of 8 gallons of standard red or white ground gas.
A personal lubrication job?
Hey, that's what it says right here. See here? Good evening, Lou.
Good evening, Jack, and good listeners. Use of the atomic bomb in Korea is said to be up to the United States, and there was a false alarm of an atomic attack on the United States. We begin our world report from Washington.
This is Washington. Lyle C. Wilson, United Press. President Truman says that use of the atomic bomb in Korea has always been under consideration, and whether it is used is up to American military leaders in the field. He personally hopes that it will not have to be employed. Truman told an overflow news conference that the A-bomb could be used without United Nations approval. He says it is one of America's many military weapons, and this country is free to use its weapons. However, he says the atomic bomb is a terrible weapon, and he doesn't like to use it because it hurts innocent victims among men, women, and children. As for sending United States and allied forces beyond the Manchurian border and expanding the war into China, the president says that would be decided by the UN. Mr. Truman made these informal remarks after reading a statement denouncing the Chinese communist aggression in Korea. He is calling Democratic and Republican congressional leaders to the White House tomorrow to ask urgent consideration for increases in appropriations for the war. He says the funds are needed to intensify the military mobilization and speed up the atomic energy program. The president plainly laid on Russia the responsibility for the Chinese communist attacks in Korea. Quote, "We hope that the Chinese people will not continue to be deceived into serving the Russian colonial policy in Asia." Unquote. Appealing for unity in this country, Truman asks all citizens to lay aside differences since, quote, "The United States is the keystone of the hope of mankind for peace and justice." Unquote. He says there is no indication that the Chinese Communist delegation at Lake Success is willing to engage in the normal peaceful process of negotiation. A reporter asked when this country should expect all-out mobilization on the home front, possibly price and wage controls. Mr. Truman says those matters are being given careful consideration. Mr. Truman says from the time the North Koreans invaded South Korea, the U.S. has been doing all it can to avert a third world war. Mr. Truman denounced as a big lie complaints by some Republican senators that Secretary of State Acheson has tried to interfere with MacArthur's command in the Far East. He says there was not a word of truth in that. In Washington, this is Lyle C. Wilson.
Hello, this is Max Jordan near the battlefront south of the 38th parallel. 80,000 Chinese Reds on a new offensive are reported attacking United Nations forces in Northeast Korea today. Otherwise, a curious lull fell on the frozen, bloody battlefront in the Northwest Front. Major General Edward Allman tells war reporters that 6 to 10 Chinese divisions suddenly confronted his 10th Corps forces in the Northeast. Lieutenant General Walton Walker's 8th Army in the Northwest is similarly faced with 200,000 Red Chinese at the outset of the communist offensive last weekend. American Marines and infantrymen around the Changjin Reservoir are surrounded in Allman's area. They are battling fiercely, but the supply route is cut. The Army reports that U.S. Marines around the Changjin Reservoir are holding their line and are not in a hopeless position. It says the Marines are being supplied by parachute drops from U.S. planes and have not yielded their positions. they're apparently not suffering too heavily while inflicting heavy casualties on the Chinese ranch. Also on the Northeast Front with me is AP correspondent Tom Stone. He reports Chinese in overwhelming force assaulting the U.S. Marine Division and American infantrymen around Chongjin Reservoir. In the Northwest, correspondent Hal Boyle reports the last American troops protecting the bitter retreat of the U.S. 8th Army across the icy Chongchun River made it safely through flaming Kunu. On the other front, an 8th Army spokesman said wintry quiet prevails over most of the Northwest today. This was confirmed by correspondent Boyle, who, flying over the front, could spot no Chinese movement. The lull comes after American, British, and Turks checked communist efforts to unhinge the right flank and pin the Allies against the Yellow Sea shore of West Korea. In Seoul, this is Max Jordan reporting.
Washington here, Jack Bell speaking. Secretary of State Dean Acheson's declaration that the free world must prepare for the worst heralds an administration drive to feed an even greater arms program in both the U.S. and Western Europe. Officials say that will be the government's initial response to the new global crisis created by Communist China's intervention in the Korean conflict. The gravity of that crisis is pointed up by Acheson's warning to the nation and the world tonight that no one can guarantee that world war will not come. Acheson pictures the free world as being under dark threat of Soviet military power with great capabilities for conquest and destruction. Meanwhile, three Republican senators, Wary of Nebraska, Bricker of Ohio, and McCarthy of Wisconsin, accuse the secretary of trying to oust General Douglas MacArthur as commander of UN forces in Korea. In Washington, this is Jack Bell.
This is Drew Pearson with the Washington merry-go-round. It was all hushed up, but one day last week, practically every top military man in Washington was anxiously scanning the sky, anticipating an enemy air raid on the nation's capital. Reason for their concern was a cable from India, which read, "Alert, all U.S. cities are due to be bombed within the next 24 hours," unquote. Astonished clerks at the message center immediately made a dozen copies. The cryptic message on official stationery has all the appearances of being an official warning. Remembering how Washington was caught asleep during Pearl Harbor, word of the impending attack was flashed from the Pentagon to every key office throughout the city, including the White House. Tension mounted to the breaking point. Then the bubble burst amid a sea of very red faces. A few calm officers decided to check the name signed to the cable from India. They discovered that the signer wasn't with the State Department, wasn't a CIA agent. In fact, he wasn't a U.S. government employee of any kind. He was, they learned, an American tourist stopping off in India. The cable had been sent on November 23rd. One officer glanced at the calendar. November 23rd was Thanksgiving. Then he queried, "What are some Americans apt to do if they're in India on Thanksgiving Day?" "Get drunk," was the reply. The assembled officers nodded in agreement. Washington was saved. In the nation's capital, this is Drew Pearson with the Washington merry-go-round.
Republican Senator Gurney of South Dakota today urged Congress to take speedy action and tighten and extend the current military draft. Gurney says there are too many exemptions and deferments now, and we have to build up our military power every way we can. KUWS Radio News Time is 6:08. Jack McKenna has this word from Cal Miller's Standard Service Station.
I'm here to announce a grand opening, folks. Friday and Saturday, Cal Miller's Standard Service is at your beck and call, and gasoline, too. Tower and Belknap, dial 9769 if you want to get in touch. Open 7 a.m. to 11 p.m. every single day. The finest service station in Upper Wisconsin. Celebrate with us. Favors and gifts galore. Oh, boy, check with the entire service staff, and you'll be very pleased. They learned all the modern methods of servicing all makes of cars. There's members Tom Gilbertson, Harvey Johnson, Paul Lagarde, and Jim Dan Hill, Jr. Indeed, coffee and donuts will be served. Congratulations to Cal Miller and Standard Oil Company. A big, big service station grand opening. Friday and Saturday, December 1st and 2nd. Don't you dare miss it, Lou.
The 3-year-old son of Mr. and Mrs. Rudy Combe of 216 Prentice Avenue in Ashland was taken to a Duluth hospital Monday afternoon after he had been stricken with polio. Attendants at St. Luke's Hospital say the baby is improving some and doing fairly well. Governor-elect Walter Kohler is considering a $6 million increase in the next 2-year University of Wisconsin budget. Board of Regents President F. J. Sensenbrenner says that that would be a 25% increase in the $26 million budget. Critics say that this would increase the already high tuition rate. Non-resident fees are one of the highest in the nation at $420 a semester. That compares with the University of Minnesota non-resident tuition of $265. The vessel John P. Rice ended Ashland's shipping season today. Carrying a load of iron ore, it had considerable difficulty cutting through the ice from the Sioux Ducks. The Coast Guard cutter Woodrush had to assist her. A prominent judge in Ashland has passed on. KUWS Radio newsman Mike Simonson has the story.
For more than half a century, Judge James McCauley resided over Ashland County Courts. The 86-year-old pioneer came to Ashland after graduating from the University of Wisconsin Law School in 1889. Judge McCauley entered the judgeship in 1894, intending to retire after 50 years. But Judge McCauley, himself a Spanish-American War hero, stayed on while newly elected Judge Walter Tate served in World War II until 1945. Besides the Spanish-American War, Judge McCauley also served in the Puerto Rican Campaign, the Mexican Border Campaign, and World War I in France. Services will be held at the Pasco Gildersleeve Funeral Home on Saturday, the Reverend Marvin Kosler officiating. Judge McCauley leaves behind a wife and 2 sons, Lou.
All Douglas County residents who take books from the public library between now and Christmas will find green and white Christmas bookmarks inserted in each book that they borrow. That according to the librarian, Miss Lucille May. Miss May says the bookmarks will call to the reader's attention the 1950 Christmas Seal sale conducted by the Superior Tuberculosis Association. The seal sale, open Monday, ends December the 25th. That's the news, Jack.
Newsman Lou Martin, folks, who knows how to seal the deal with Christmas seals. Now the forecast for this Thursday evening, November 30th, 1950. Cloudy with a low tonight at 10 above. Friday's high will be 22 degrees with a moderate wind. And it's music time now. Here's a new one from the Fontaine Sisters and 17 on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Cutest gal you've ever seen. All the boys are really keen on the head.
LaFontaine Sisters and 17 on station KUWS. And now, newsman Lou Martin with the old news.
I wish you wouldn't put it that way. It doesn't sound good. It's news from 40 years ago today in Superior's history.
Before radio, when Lou wore a straw hat, stood in the park square, and shouted the news from a bullhorn.
Cracks about my age do not bother me one bit.
It's the cracks from your age that get you.
Anyway, on November the 30th, 1910, the departure of the steamer Grammar from the Great Northern Ore Docks ended the shipping season. With 8.5 million tons of iron ore shipped from the Eloise Docks, it broke the previous record set in 1907. And the American Heating Company of Superior got a large contract to install heating plants in the new U.S. Steelworks plant under construction in Morgan Park, west of Duluth. The $15,000 contract includes the Ford shop, the machine shop, and the plate shop, Jack.
Lou Martin with the old news of 40 years ago.
One more thing from today.
What? You mean you have new news?
Superior State College was without water today when a water main broke. Firemen had to hook up hoses to nearby hydrants, piping the water to Superior State. So now, they've got water again.
Seems very strange not to call it Superior Teachers College anymore.
After 25 years of STC, it's now SSC. I remember when they called it Superior Normal College before that.
Figures. Not me, though. I'm way too young for that. Let's enjoy Johnny Ray now on Walking My Baby Back Home on the Martin and McKenna Show.
Went out, gee, but it's great after staying out late, walking my baby back home. I'm over meadow and farm, walking my baby back home. But we go along harmonizing a song, or I'm reciting a poem. The owls go by and they give me the eye, walking my baby back home. We stop for a while, she gives me a smile and cuddles her cheek to my chest. We start in to pet, and that's when I get her powder all over my vest. Just when I try to straighten my tie, she wants to borrow my comb. One kiss and then we continue again, walking my baby back home. Well, gee, but it's great after staying out late, walking my baby back home. Well, arm in arm over meadow and farm, walking my baby home. Well, we go along singing a song, I'm reciting a poem. Walking my baby back home. We stop for a while, she gives me a smile and cuddles her cheek to my chest. Well, we start into pet, and that's when I get her powder all over my vest. And just when I try to straighten the tie, she wants to borrow my comb. One kiss and then we do it again, walking my baby back home.
Johnny Ray and Walking My Baby Back Home on KUWS.
Now for tonight's editorial, we have Superior Evening Telegram Managing Editor Seagar Swanson. Good evening, sir.
Evening, Lou. By the way, I remember when it was Superior Normal School, too. And so does Jack.
Oh, no, no, oh, no. I'm way too young for that.
You and forever 39-year-old Jack Benny. Go ahead.
It's time we accept life in this modern atomic age. The Army expects by 1951 to have a simple device which will give warning when an individual has received a dangerous dose of atomic radiation. Designed to be worn around the neck, like the familiar service dog tag. It is to be worn by soldiers in combat areas and to be made available to civilian defense organizations. It will reveal instantly varying degrees of exposure to radiation up to the saturation point, that is, the point at which death becomes certain. Despite this somber note about the saturation point, the general availability of this device should help in learning to live with atomic energy. Even the most level-headed person may have panicky moments if they think of exposure to atomic attack. This is caused not so much by appreciation of the force of atomic explosion as by the uncertainty about personal exposure. One can receive radiation sufficient to cause serious injury or to kill without being aware of it. Here's an answer: a device which tells the wearer whether he has been imperiled and to what degree. Military people are beginning to regard the atomic bomb as just another weapon. Civilians may never be able to look on it quite so casually, but no doubt a calmer view could be achieved if more of the mystery and needless fears could be erased, Lou.
Seeger. Jack?
Lou? Seeger? Me? You? Oh, Colonel. Frick. Frack. Both at it again, I see.
Douglas County Draft Board Chairman Colonel Joe Raffley. You're up next with fallout shelters, I believe.
We prefer to call them commie busters.
Oh, can't wait, yeah. Now here's Frank Sinatra and Love and Marriage on the Martin McKenna Show.
Love and marriage, love and marriage, go together like a horse and carriage. This I tell you, brother, you can't have one without the other. Love and marriage, love and marriage, it's an institute you can't disparage. Ask the local gentry and they will say it's elementary. Try to separate them, it's an illusion. Try and you will only come to this conclusion. Love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. Dad was told by mother, you can't have one, you can't have none, you can't have one without the other. Separate them, it's an illusion. Try and you will only come to this conclusion. Love and marriage go together like a horse and carriage. Dad was told by mother, you can't have one, you can't have one without the other.
Toby, before you're a colorblind.
Frank Sinatra and Love and Marriage.
Little girls wear
on
pink.
Station
how many dangerous little girls do you know?
I don't know if
there'll
be a little
girl in town. No, I can understand red for dead, but I'd rather be dead than red. You understand what I'm saying? You understand what I'm trying to say?
Welcome to the noisiest soundproof studios in the world.
It's only soundproof if the noise is outside the studio.
Colonel Raffley and KUWS radio station engineer in charge, Joe Cardonio.
What's all the fuss?
Genius engineer boy here fixed me up with one of those atomic radiation finder gizmos.
ARF, for short.
ARF?
Yeah, and he's color-coded it in a very, well, in a very unmanly fashion.
Well, I didn't think the colonel was so fashion-conscious.
What are the colors?
It's got a feminine communistic kind of scheme to it.
Oh, sheesh, feminine communistic. The colonel's so touchy these days.
I've noticed that, too.
He needs to get out more and walk.
Yeah, get some fresh air. See the beauty of God's great majesties.
I've been kind of edgy lately, and it's all this atomic talk, especially down at the Legion. A-bomb this, A-bomb that. Oh, my gosh, it goes on and on and on.
So, what's the ARF color scheme?
I want to know how you got your hands on something that's apparently only in the top secret prototype stage.
Engineers have a very close, if not secretive, community.
Which is why they meet in your mom's basement every Saturday night.
That's right, to keep prying eyes away from our many ingenious plans. Besides, Mom makes great brownies. They're everyone's favorite.
Yeah, perfect. Perfect combination. Brownies. With lots of nuts.
That's right. Hey, is that a crackbuster? We're no nuttier than those guys holed up at the Legion Hall playing old maid.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah.
Yeah, well, yeah. For your information, smart guy, we play war.
Yeah, well, a tough man's game is slapjack.
I don't want to know that much about these guys' private lives.
Anyway, I'm here to give everyone some sound, solid advice about building a commie buster.
Or bomb shelter.
Not exactly, Lou, my good man. In this atomic age, it is a fallout shelter. Unlike the threat of dropping bombs as in the Second World War, this new threat is of radiation, gamma rays, and beta particles, of which my said ARF device detects.
The government has just published a new book that every good red-blooded American should have in their homes. It's called Survival Under Atomic Attack. In fact, pages 15, 16, 17, and 18 should be torn out of the book and memorized. That's how important this book is, people.
Oh, I concur. That means agree, Raffy. Highly radioactive material falls, subjecting anything within the line of sight to radiation. Indeed, a significant health hazard.
All right. It says here, inhabitants should plan to remain sheltered for at least 2 weeks, then work outside for gradual increasing amounts of time to 4 hours a day at 3 weeks. The normal work is to sweep or wash fallout into shallow trenches to decontaminate the area. They should sleep in a shelter for several months. This is good advice. It's straight from Uncle Sam himself.
This, of course, is information using the current fallout from a 20-kiloton atomic weapon. If in the future the expected development of the much more destructive hydrogen bomb comes out, then naturally this information will change.
Naturally. So, people, the name of the book is Survival Under Atomic Attack. Copies are available free of charge at the American Legion Post. Just ask your local legionnaire.
If he's not too busy playing old maid.
That's enough of that.
On that cheerful note, friends, let's listen to the soothing sounds of Nat King Cole and Mona Lisa on the Martin and McKenna Surviving a Colonel's Blast show.
Men have named you. You're so like the lady with the mystic smile. Is it only 'cause you're lonely they have blamed you for that Mona Lisa strangeness in your smile? Do you smile to tempt a lover, Mona Lisa? Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been brought to your doorstep. They just lie there, and they die there.
Are you warm? Are you real? Mona Lisa. Are just a cold and lonely, lovely work of art. Smile to tempt a lover, Mona Lisa. Or is this your way to hide a broken heart? Many dreams have been brought to your doorstep. They just lie there and they die there. Are you warm? Are you real, Mona Lisa? Are just a cold and lonely, lovely work of art, Mona Lisa? Mona Lisa.
Nat King Cole and Mona Lisa on station KUWS, of course. So, Joe, what are the colors of your arf, arf?
Just one arf. There are three colors, although our initial prototype had 16 colors for variations of atomic fallout, but we reduced it down to three. We didn't want to confuse people like the Colonel.
Yeah, well, all of them are sissy and anti-American colors. See? Everything's okay color is, get this, rose. See that? Rose.
What's wrong with rose?
I didn't expect you to understand, Mr. Wearer of Colored Socks McMartin.
Lou's always been on the cutting edge of fashion.
Yeah. Well, I'll tell you what. Real men wear calf-high black socks. Anywho, the next color is pink. That means low levels of radiation.
Followed by red, the traditional color of danger.
So you got la-di-da rose, pinko, and commie red.
Rose for everything's rosy, pink, and it's time to think, point at your head, and red, you're dead.
Hey, my arf is pink. What do I do?
Probably from Jack's breath. He just ate a Limburger and Braunschweiger sandwich.
Whew! I just thought the Colonel needed a new deodorant.
I'm getting rather nervous here. I mean, what if this thing turns red?
Huh. Funny, it shouldn't be doing that.
It's red! It's red! I see it's red! It's turning red! It's getting redder! It's red!
Funny. No, it shouldn't be doing that.
Nice manly scream, Colonel.
And that's a wrap, folks. Oh, boy. Stay tuned for One Man's Family. Father Knows Best, and Dragnet. We'll be back same time, same place on your radio dial. The good Lord willing, and Joe's arf is worse than his bite. For Lou Martin, this is Jack McKenna wishing one and all a good night.
Now it's kind of a magenta. Is magenta a color, or is that amber?
That's funny. It shouldn't be
amethyst.
Doing that.
What is amethyst?
Well, why don't you stick it on your hat and go coal mining or something?
You've been listening to Radio Superior 1950, an original production by KUWS Radio and Wisconsin Public Radio. Radio Superior is produced and written by Mike Simonson. Other performances by Duke Skorich, Tom Martinson, Don Hansen, Joel Anderson, John Munson, and Pat Kelly. All events reported on Radio Superior 1950 are actual accounts from the Superior Evening Telegram. This is your announcer, Mark Snow, speaking. Good night.